Welcome to CFRI Cystic Fibrosis Community Voices, a video podcast series created by and for the cystic fibrosis community.
Hello, everyone. I'm Siri Vaith, Executive Director of CFRI, and I welcome you to what promises to be a very, very informative webinar with Dr. Virginia Stallings. This podcast is part of our CF Community Voices podcast program. Weight gain has historically been an issue for many individuals with CF, and it has long been understood that there is a strong correlation between nutritional status and lung function. And while many people who are benefiting from CFTR modulators, most specifically Trikafta, have now entered a new realm of actually needing to lose weight, there is still a large group of people for whom calorie loading is still a daily battle. Before we get started, I want to remind people that the information shared in this recording should not be used for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, and to, of course, please consult with your medical team before making any changes to your medical regimen. I want to thank our generous sponsors who've made this podcast possible, including Vertex Pharmaceuticals, Genentech, Chiesi USA, and Viatris. And now it is my honor to introduce our presenter, Dr. Virginia Stallings. Dr. Stallings is a board-certified nutrition pediatrician and professor of pediatrics at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and University of Pennsylvania Perelman School of Medicine. Dr. Stallings has worked in nutrition clinical care and research for more than 30 years. She designed and led the NIH study on NCALA for people with cystic fibrosis, and she has made numerous research contributions to nutrition-related outcomes in children and adults with chronic illnesses, including cystic fibrosis, sickle cell disease, and HIV/AIDS. Welcome, Dr. Stallings.
Thank you, Sari. I'm delighted to be here and be a part of this ongoing educational program that the Research Institute does. And we do appreciate those of us out in the clinical care and centers, all those contributions. If you put up the slides, please. As Sari mentioned, this is really about nutrition, but for almost the first time over these last few years, we've really now begun to think about nutrition as both how to gain weight or potentially how not to gain too much weight. So that's, we're going to try to do the balance today. Next slide. Good. So important in all of our academic activities are the disclosures. And here you see listed that I do consult for a number of companies quite frequently about CF and nutrition, listing the NIH study that I'll talk about at the end that was funded for CF. And that then did lead to a new product and to mention that I continued to be a medical advisor for the group. And lastly, for part of the disclosure, when this started to become a company, my hospital, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, is an institutional investor. The next slide really is the, one of the most important things I can say now. It took us a number of years to get to this point, but I think now everybody on the CF team, and we're able to share with patients and families, that actually nutritional status and growing to your genetic potential and having a healthy body composition really do contribute to improved outcomes in all patients with CF. Next slide. And as we've gone through that, really what I'm going to focus on are the non-pulmonary parts of CF. And again, so delighted that after we have the strong evidence we do, that the GI and nutrition and endocrine groups are an integral part of care. So from my side of the fence, certainly always interested in the pancreatic insufficiency and the liver disease, and occasionally some of the ramifications of meconium ileus at birth. So the next slide lets us focus on the pancreas. And to set up the whole story for the nutrition part, in classic CF and those with pancreatic insufficiency, the pancreas is damaged really before birth in most patients. And what that means is the part of the pancreas that makes the digestive enzymes, particularly the lipase that you hear about all of the time, is not able to be made. And then the other cells are the ones that secrete some very important fluid from the pancreas into the intestines that include bicarbonate and help make everything balance out as far as creating the right environment in the intestines so that we can digest and absorb food. The next slide, again, is the other big overlay that over the last number of years, we have certainly become aware of the importance of the specific genetic mutations and in essence, which group they go in, because we're able to then talk about what part of the function has been damaged. As you all know, the most common mutations are in that group two, which includes the Delta F508 mutation. And those in group three, with the classic example of G551D, were the mutations that we were first able to address with modulator therapy. And this really does set the set. This is the setting of modern care. Next slide. So with that, for many years, the focus of nutrition care has been because of the chronic malabsorption that our patients needed to eat more food than typical, often described as a 20% more, and it needed to be a higher fat diet so we got more calories in. And we didn't focus so much on matching the specific calories and fat, and we didn't focus so much on healthier fats versus fats that might not be so healthy. And again, these are things that are beginning to change in care. Integral to care for those with pancreatic insufficiency certainly is making sure the fat-soluble vitamin status is supported, and that for essential fatty acids, the two essential fatty acids. So the next slide. Thank you, Siri. So this is always one of my favorite things. This is a slide that shows that we have reached the point where adults with CF outnumber children. And that really is a reflection of the improvements we've made in care, which have resulted in longer life, fewer illnesses, better quality of life. But as a pediatrician, I'm always delighted that CF is no longer just a pediatric disease, and very happy that we now have to think about our adults in care as well as children. The next slide, please. Now, I wanted to use these graphs. When you go to clinic and you talk, particularly with the dietitian, you're often going to hear about, well, how are you on the growth chart or on the BMI chart? And these are, again, data from the CF patient registry, which you know is across the whole country. And here on the left, you see the 50th percentile, the bold red line, and then following the BMI, the weight and the height. And this does show that over the years, beginning in 1998 and through 2018 on this figure, that we've been steadily making progress. But I do really want to point out two things, that you can see that the blue line for height in children is really still quite a bit below our goal. And the weight line has gotten better, and the BMI line has gotten better. When you show this kind of data as the median, the important thing to remember is half of the patients are below the line and half are above it. Again, which speaks very well to the fact that some of our patients are doing very well with weight, but maybe not so much with height. And we need to think of both sides of the weight scale now. For adults, we use a BMI number, 22 for females and 23 for males. And here again, you can see that we have been making steady progress in improving the BMI status of adults with CF. And all of this matters because these were some of the early data that really showed that if you have better nutritional status, then you're going to have better outcomes, which certainly include lung function, fewer infections, that sort of thing. Next slide. So here, I wanted to just speak a minute about what I think the whole community has been going through as we've gotten the new medications. And ivacaftor was certainly the leading and, if you will, the most powerful drug that we've had introduced. It was such a perfect fit for those with gating mutations, those in the class 3 category. And it's now been approved for about 38 different mutations and represents about 15% of the population of patients with CF. As this was rolled out, obviously we were most focused on the lung disease improvements, but then we certainly noticed that in the studies which started in adults and then over the years, treatment was approved now down to infants as young as 4 months, that we began to notice that we were really seeing weight gain and a very positive thing for all of us, both on the pulmonary and the nutrition side. As far as height velocity and growth, most of the time we saw changes in growth rates in children. And all of this, we think, was attributed, as we studied why, that the improving the cell function with these medicines really decreased the amount of energy or the resting energy needed for our patients. The gut got healthier, there was less inflammation, and we actually saw better absorption of dietary fat. And there were a number of other things that we were able to detect as these medicines started to come into very wide use. Also to mention that ivacaftor and all of the other drugs in its classes are fat-soluble drugs, so they really need to be taken with a food or a beverage that has some fat in it. And that, so it's not the kind of medicine you want to take on an empty stomach or just with a glass of water. Next slide. So this figure shows you the change in weight from one of the studies. And I think it really captures what we now generally observe, that when you go on the medicine, and this was one of the randomized studies. So you see the flat line at the bottom, the placebo without much change in weight, and then those on ivacaftor where the blue line goes up and then pretty much plateaus. And the experience from the data we have now in most of the drugs is that the weight gain is usually over about the first 6 months, and then it pretty much stabilizes. As far as increased rates of weight gain. Okay, next slide. So as we think about moving into the future, we definitely are interested in all the wonderful outcomes from the highly effective drugs. Ivacaftor and certainly Trikaftor are the two that are the dominant ones, the ones we're learning the most from. And I listed here some of the, we've learned a good bit about pulmonary outcomes, but these in the lower bullet points, you see some of the things that the nutrition and GI side still wants to learn more about. But one of the key things is as we address potentially higher weight gain, we need to start thinking about food patterns and how those might change. If you go back to that, one of the first slides, that in fact patients who are really having a very positive reaction with this don't need to eat 20% more food anymore. They need to come back to more normal pattern of food intake, normal pattern of fat intake, and enjoy the increased physical activity and energy that they feel. Let's see if I can. There we go. Next slide, please. So, one of the questions then is where are we again today? And as now a transition from those who thinking about weight stabilization or not wanting to gain too much weight, I wanted to give you a little bit of background on what we have as our status today. And all of this comes from the 2019 patient registry from the foundation. And you can see I followed what's happened since 2004 on some really key outcomes when we think about growth in children. So the weight that's less than the 10th percentile, which would be really quite low and not what we would want in patients with CF, has gone from being about 20% now down to 10%. Height or stunting, patients being shorter than their genetic potential, using the benchmark of less than the 5th percentile, again, has gone from about 15% down to 9 or 10%. Those are dramatic improvements, and we really credit the whole CF care environment, certainly the nutrition care, the antibiotic care, and in these last few years, the introduction of modulator therapy. But then to call to your attention what I've circled in red here, we've gotten this nutritional status improvement by understanding the importance of using supplemental feeding. Some patients, we at some point move to tube feeding, which is most likely with gastrostomy and nighttime tube feedings. And you can see across the country, about 10% of the patients with CF are on tube feeding at any given time. The next line is about supplemental feedings, but only using oral products, whether this is the shakes or the drinks, or adding other things to food. And at any given time, more than 40% of patients with CF are being guided with their dietitians to use specific feeding support. So just to point out that we have really developed very sophisticated and effective ways of supporting growth, but they have involved moving into what we call the tiers of nutrition support. And then the last thing you see circled here, because again, adults care is something that we are working more and more on optimizing. About half of patients over 18 do not have their BMI or their body weight for their actual height in the optimal level. So we still have a good bit of room to go for our adult patients. And the other nutrition-related complication, endocrine complication as well, is the rising number of young adults who have CF-related diabetes. And that is about at 30%. So there's still a lot going on when you think about nutritional care for our patients with CF. So the next slide. Good. So now I'm going to shift over to really some of my personal research. And as Siri mentioned, I've been working in CF really my whole career. And I've been really trying to find ways to improve this fat malabsorption. And it's very clear from all the evidence we have that even when you optimize the enzyme replacement therapy, the PERT, that there is still persistent fat malabsorption. And that's been shown, in all of our studies, that enzymes are life-saving. They're absolutely essential, but they don't take your absorption of dietary fat up to the level that a healthy person would have. So with that as part of what I have been working on, and along with Dr. Yersir, who was the inventor of this structured lipid idea, we really went to the NIH and got funding to look at testing this in patients with CF and pancreatic insufficiency. And the core part of this special molecule is it can be digested and absorbed without having to have the lipase or the bile acids for pretty efficient absorption. So the next slide. And there's a whole series of publications, and I've listed them there if you're interested or in looking at them with your CF Center team. But just to give you the highlights, the big clinical trial had over 100 patients. They were, the volunteers were all between 5 and 18 years of age. And when we did the study over the 12 months using a randomized trial where some people got placebo and some got the active new medicine, that we saw a very significant, both statistically and clinically, improvement of the fat absorption. The scientific test is the coefficient of fat absorption, or the CFA. Then over the last couple of years, the question kept coming up about, well, do the patients with more severe baseline malabsorption, do they respond better to this treatment? And so we did what I call the secondary analysis, and that's what I want to show you a little bit more about. And the reference to that is the bottom one, the 2020 reference. So next slide. So in this, to sort of isolate those that were most at risk for malabsorption and then documented to have the worst malabsorption, we looked at the first 3 months of the 12-month study, and we identified the patients that really had very, very strong compliance with the program and excellent collection of the dietary intake and the stool intake, which is what we needed to do to answer these questions. And that gave us 66 children. And as I mentioned, this was a randomized study. And to describe the placebo, instead of being an empty placebo or like a sugar pill, it actually was another powder that looked very similar and delivered the same number of calories and the same amount of fat. So scientifically, that was a really good design to try to isolate if there was something special about the structured lipid other than just delivering calories. And so with this design, we divided the patients in half, and we had those who had higher dietary fat loss and those that had less, or they came into the study with better absorption patterns. So the next slide. So I'll run through just three slides that show some of the results in figures and tables. So this one is looking at that absorption of dietary fat, that CFA value. And over on the left, you see when I looked at all of the patients, that whole 110, over the 3 months, the darker blue line is the new product, now called Incala. The absorption went from 82% to 88%, which was clinically wonderful and also statistically significant. Over on the right panel, you see now this is the secondary absorption, secondary analysis with the 66 patients. And here with the darker blue, you see in this high-risk group that at the patients with CF improved their absorption from 79 up to 86%. Again, a major improvement. And those on the placebo, which is the lighter blue, basically stayed the same over these 3 months. So you see that at 73 compared to 71%. So our primary question was answered with this. Do patients with greater need to treat their malabsorption respond better? And this showed that it did. And the next slide is then asking the question that we often spend a lot of time on clinically. And this is about growth and what were the growth responses. And here the data actually presented in Z-scores But these are very comparable to the percentages you're accustomed to seeing on the growth chart. And I can just guide you, I think. So it's the weight, height, and then BMI, Z-scores, and compared where they were at baseline and then after 3 months. And the delta is how much change they had. And then the p-value is, you know, the usual science question of was it statistically significant or not. And I can summarize all of this by saying these were really impressive increases in growth velocity, both in weight and in height. And when you increase those, you certainly increase your BMI. But in our very pediatric language, what this showed is with increasing weight and height velocity, we really saw catch-up growth. So they weren't just growing as they might have along a typical pattern, but they were growing faster and catching up their previous losses. Next slide. And then the last thing we were really interested in our clinical care and scientific area was that about essential fatty acids. And in CF, with this chronic fat malabsorption, we know that many of our patients develop, well, they also lose their two essential fatty acids for humans. And the values for those are often very low and occasionally get to the point of being deficient and in that state capable of really having some clinical complications. So if you look at the figure down on the left that says essential fatty acids improved, this was looking, we had lots and lots of data on different fatty acids, but the linoleic acid you see with the little red star, again, now comparing the placebo in gold to the Incala in blue, and that is the major essential fatty acid for humans, that it went up 20% and the placebo didn't change or went down a little bit. And alpha-linoleic acid, the other essential fatty acid, went up over 50%. So this again was documenting that we were improving not only fat absorption that was going to provide calories, but also some specific fats that have health benefits. So the next slide. Good. So after we finished the study, basically the product I had it made, you know, particularly for the study. Once the study was over, we had to have our couple of years of getting all the data analyzed and published. And so the product wasn't available at all. And so I just, part of what I wanted to mention is that now it is available and on the market. And I'll tell you just a little bit about this. And what it is now called is Incala. So to summarize the core science of this over on the left, that this is really based on a very unique technology where it's a structured lipid. And you see the drawing in the bottom of that column showing sort of the backbone over on the left, that is that lysophosphatidylcholine, and then the long legs out to the right are all the different fatty acids, and that it was designed really to improve fat absorption. It also helps with the fat-soluble vitamins. Now, when we used it in the clinical trial, it's a powder that you add to foods and beverages. And since then, and the powder that I used actually was coated to keep it as particles with a wheat flour and with sugar. So now that it's really being manufactured for long-term clinical use, I'm happy to say that the the wheat is gone. So it's now, you know, gluten-free and that it's non-GMO and non-lactose. It's a plant-based product. And really the key that we and all of our CF psychology folks for many years have been trying to think about is how to keep families and patients focused on being able to use favorite foods, family foods, culturally preferred foods, rather than shifting to a nutritional drink, which does certainly provide good nutrients, but takes you away from that sense of family eating experiences and normalizing that. The next slide. Just to show you the nutrition fact label, this shows that per dose it's 100 calories and that it really does have the healthy fats, which are mostly coming from the polyunsaturated and the monounsaturated fats. And you see a picture of what the packaging looks like, which is much nicer than what we used in the clinical trial, which was just this little, foil pack. So next slide. So now to think briefly what this we think is going to help with the nutrition therapy. It was certainly developed for CF, and that was our mission and our goal. And from that, it really will be able to help patients with a lot of different pancreatic insufficient diseases, but also potentially others with fat malabsorption from other diseases, other causes of growth failure and weight loss. But when you think of, next slide, please. But when you think about CF, we have our classic CF story. Some people with CF also do sometimes also develop some chronic pancreatitis. And we, I think, again, as patients live longer, we may see a bit of this. Also to mention that the diabetes that we see in CF is this type 3C. And again, all of these kinds of indications may be related to CF or other pancreatic diseases might be useful. And then lastly, on the next slide, just to mention on our GI side, the other problems that sometimes lead to growth failure are certainly those patients, and it's about 10% or so, who do get CF-related liver disease, and with that certainly bile acid depletion. And then on the intestinal side, we know that there is some intestinal inflammation with CF. We occasionally have more short gut syndrome because of meconium ileus at birth. And there certainly are some motility disorders in a few patients with CF. So the CF gut is a pretty complicated place. And then the next slide, please. And then just, these are the kinds of things that the CF dietitians are beginning, to learn more about from the powder, but it's about 100 calories per dose, and that they have the skills to figure out how many doses that might be helpful for these specific weight gain goals of an individualized patient. And that this, next slide. And then just to mention one of the the other issues that has come up a good bit is I've been talking with the CF dietitians over the years, is since we know that a certain number of our patients really do benefit from tube feeding, that this is something that can also potentially be added to the tube feeding to either reach your weight gain goal more quickly, or also during those difficult times when you're transitioning and you want to taper off of the tube feedings. So just sharing some of this because the CF diet, I am in contact with a lot of them, and I'm on the forum where we get all the emails. So these are some of the things that have become to emerge with that. So in next slide. Good. So in summary, the big point, and I think we will all see this, become more and more a point of emphasis in the coming years, that we now need to think about much more individualized nutrition recommendations in CF care. And it's going to focus on food intake patterns, more careful balancing the enzyme dose for the fat content, and to really continue to do the proper nutrition support for the individualized patient. We know that optimizing weight, both in children and adults, and optimizing linear growth in children really will help long-term health. As I mentioned, the weight gain with modulator therapy is common, and it's important for patients to know that this is happening to a lot of people, and we understand it, and we've got to change some of the dietary patterns. But often the weight gain, the noticeable weight gain, is over the first 6 months, and then things seem to be adapting really quite well. And then I mentioned this new structured lipid therapy that has, you know, published safety and efficacy data that I think is well placed to help patients who need to gain weight. And then lastly, this really goes back to the importance as part of the care plan of monitoring the weight, and may we all get back to our in-person clinic visits and things like that. But I think now the interactions about weight gain and height between the dietitian and the patients and the families, the dietitians are going to be very well equipped and very thoughtful about helping to monitor this and then make the adjustments about whether how to decrease caloric intake or how to tweak the food patterns to prevent excessive weight gain, and also how to stay on our mission to make sure that children and adults have a good weight status. The next slide. I just put this in the slide set because I know this will be curated, but this gives you a screenshot about the product and a couple of emails and websites that if there's some follow-up. And the next slide, I think, is the last one. And I wish the sky were that blue and beautiful here in Philadelphia today. But at least it's not snowing. So thank you for that. And Sari, I'll close and be happy to have questions or comments.
Thank you, Dr. Stallings. That was fascinating and just encouraging to know. I know there's so much emphasis, you know, we're very excited for those who can use CFTR modulators, but it's a great reminder that there are just so many aspects to this disease and each component needs continued attention and innovation. So thank you for that.
Very good.
We do have some questions from people who were anticipating this presentation, and we'll see if we have time to get through all of them. First question was, what is the process to turn fat-soluble vitamins into water-soluble vitamins for increased absorption for someone with CF?
Well, that is a very good question because, you know, there are the four fat-soluble vitamins that are plentiful in our food generally, and they're usually with foods that have fat in them. So in healthy people, they all come in together, get reprocessed and absorbed. And in CF, because they're treated like fat, we have an excessive loss. Why we've always had the CF-specific vitamins. It is actually fairly hard to turn a fat-soluble vitamin into water-soluble. But what you've seen is there's been some effort sort of to package it with things that make that fat and water interface more effective and then be able to be absorbed. But I think that is, that's not something we're ever going to do perfectly. Which is why the CF vitamins are, almost all of the doses are higher. And we use higher doses to compensate for saying, well, you know, we're going to still be losing 20% of this, so we can give you more and then balance that out. Now, when we use this new product, we did actually see an improvement in vitamin A and vitamin E, I think. Yeah, I know it wasn't K. And in those two, what we saw is they're being associated with that molecule I showed you, and in that same idea, get taken over to the intestinal wall and get absorbed better. There aren't any of the fat soluble vitamins, but this just showed that it's creating a healthier gut environment and all of the fats, some of the food fat. Some of the food vitamins are benefiting.
What is the effect of increased fat absorption and nutrients on the liver? Can this help to avoid or stave off liver cirrhosis?
Very good. So, you know, the liver is such an important organ in all of metabolism. And so one of the things that you heard me mention a couple of times that for many years, we really didn't focus on what type of fat our patients had. You know, we just want them to eat more food and eat more fat. And now we know that we do need to think more carefully about the healthier fats, the polyunsaturates, the monounsaturates compared with the saturated ones. And that will help liver metabolism and cholesterol and heart healthy and all of those things. So I think that is one of the things, again, culturally in our care system, we're doing that course correction. There's a lot of complicated reasons about why someone gets cirrhosis. In the specific CF-related liver disease, we really don't understand the mechanism very well, because only about 10-12% of the patients get it. They tend to get it when they're younger, like in their second decade, you know, whereas we think most of our other CF diseases, whether it's diabetes or bone health, all that's happening in your 20s and 30s and 40s. So that I think is something we'll continue to work on. I will again mention, because I didn't emphasize this, but this new product is very choline rich. And choline is a vitamin most people have never heard of, but it's another one of the vitamins in CF where the metabolism is a little abnormal. And giving extra choline actually does help. And one of the side studies that we did as part of this one, as we looked at the liver and the leg muscle to see how the fat and the choline stores were there. So I didn't want to emphasize that, but this is a product that other MCF and in other diseases, particularly around transplant time, you know, there are a few CF liver transplants, most are lung. And certainly many other liver transplants where people are beginning to think about using this, because it's good to rehabilitate transplant patients, but it also has the choline and the fatty acids. So that's an area when you talk about where do we need more research. I think certainly we have not, we don't know as much as we'd like to about the CF liver.
Thank you. And I can tell you, I have a daughter with CF who's in her 20s. And so we're of the generation where, you know, myself and my other fellow CF parents used to joke, the only parents who could be guilt-free taking their kids for fast food, right?
Absolutely.
About the type of fat. It was just calorie load, calorie load, calorie load. So it was a course correction for everyone.
Right. And I think we have to keep saying that out loud, because so many patients are going through this right now. And I don't want people to be unnecessarily worried. And personally, as a nutrition and CF doctor, I prefer people have a little bit of extra weight on them and plenty of muscle and be fit. But our body image is shifting from that of being sort of a little on the thin side to hopefully right in the middle. And that's where we want to be.
Another question came in. Can better fat absorption assist with the issues of partial or full blockages in the intestine caused by CF?
So thinking, we do have a subset of patients who have the episodically the obstruction syndrome. And again, that's something that has not been studied carefully, but certainly would be something that in theory, having better absorption in the early part of the intestines might well help that. Now, as you said at the beginning, don't take any of this as medical guidance, but that would be one of the things that we would have healthier, more typical stool going down from the small intestines to the large intestines, a better balance of less fat, more water, and that's something we really look forward to learning about. Good.
And is an increase in fat absorption known to help with sleep issues and or cognitive issues?
Really good questions. Well, you know, sleep, we don't know that much about, except, you know, in younger children, with the idea that if you, and I guess older people too, that eating and, not waking up really hungry is good. And, you know, now there's more and more emphasis about eating and having, you know, a really solid 8 or 10 hours with no food going in. In the past, we might not have had that with CF because I would be bugging you to have the nighttime snack and get up in the morning and, you know, but I do think that some of that may help. But, you know, sleep in CF is just beginning to be looked at. The hardest part for sleep with CF is the nighttime cough. And, you know, once that is better, and, you know, it's like for all of us, if you get a cold, you know, the thing that keeps you up at night is that coughing, and it takes you out of a deep sleep into a lighter sleep. Very good question. And I think as people with CF have better health in general, sleep will be one of the things that should get better. And if it doesn't, we've got really good people who can help be sure that there's not something else wrong with the sleep patterns, because abnormal sleep is not uncommon, you know, in the healthy population too. Good.
Specific to Incala, are there any known side effects of Incala, such as gas or bloating, or any known changes to the microbiome of the GI tract?
Well, I can answer the last one because it really, it hasn't been studied with the microbiome. And I know that's coming up. And I think someone's going to take that opportunity. But, you know, my studies were done a little while ago, and we did not include microbiome as part of the protocol. And what was the first part of the question? Sorry.
Side effects such as gas.
Side effects. Good. So the good thing that I can say about this was very much a double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled trial. And the placebo had, you know, 300 calories, and the Incala had 300 calories. So that's the perfect way to sort of ask, can you attribute something to one or the other? We did very good collection of side effects or adverse events. And there really was no difference at all. So that is reassuring from a safety point of view. Anecdotally, what we heard, and we're hearing again now that patients are beginning to use this, is it actually improves the gas, and the bowel movements might look more formed. Because again, thinking about the fats being absorbed where it should be, and less is in the lower intestinal tract. So I think that, and certainly the company is keeping, you know, listening carefully, But I had over 100 patients. They were on it for either a year or 18 months. And we really did not see any safety concerns. And people who really found great foods to put it in and were, you know, very compliant are the one, you know, it's like finding the right match. Do you want it in your oatmeal or your peanut butter and jelly sandwich or your smoothie? Generally had improved GI symptoms.
It actually segues in well into the next question. Is there an eating plan to go with the use of Incala, or is there a reason to change any eating habits when one uses the product?
So I don't think I would think of it as a plan, but almost what I was saying, there are a lot of recipes and families are beginning to send them in, which is kind of fun. And, you know, but I think of it as go to the things you enjoy eating and find the ones that, you know, you mix it in and you just sort of forget it's there. And you really wouldn't have to change anything, you know, in particular. You do not need to add more enzymes for Incala. It takes care of itself, but you have to use your enzymes, you know, for the other food. So that's always important. But it's, you know, it's just been fun to watch. I mean, some people really are the beverage people in the smoothies or the orange juice or the hot chocolate. Others, you know, want to put it in their oatmeal and their scrambled eggs. And their, we had kids who, you know, put it on their peanut butter and jelly sandwich and who knew, but it's gone in meatloaf. It's, you know, it's really very versatile. So the key is for the family or the patient to think about how can I do this and maintain as much normal, fun, food, family, social. So we look forward, you know, keep sending in the feedback because that'll help the company and, you know, the CF dietitians are beginning to share their experience. So it's been fun to watch what's happening out there.
We know that controlling for many things, women with CF still tend to have worse outcomes than men with CF. And I thought it was interesting on your chart for BMI, the difference between men and women. And I guess this is maybe not fact-based, but I'm curious about your opinion. Which parts of it are a physiological issue? Which part of it is cultural for teen girls and adult for women? And how to address that disparity between women and men?
You know, I've wondered and worried about that forever because, and the difference between using survival as, you know, the real benchmark, the number of years apart has been getting smaller and smaller. And I'm happy for that. I do think there has been, I think there are two things. Most of our growth, if we really focus, now that we have early diagnosis and newborn screening, if we could really get all the babies, toddlers, young kids on their growth curve, you know, during that first 3 or 4 years, that's some of the growth that we never catch up. And then, of course, the other time you can sort of do some extra is just before puberty, because, you know, after girls have menarche, they don't grow tall anymore. And boys have a few more years there. So I've often worried that there was a little bit of, as you said, bias that we were a little more tolerant of our female patients being on the skinny side than we were our male patients from an early age all the way up. And then we have a societal push of, you know, thinness being an attribute that's often associated with women. How do we turn that around as we want to grow at the genetic potential? We want everybody to have as much muscle as they can. We push for fitness. And again, things that we, you know, in the past, the pulmonary function decline has slowed so much that now we really can have our children and teenagers really having a more physically active life. But that being said, for a girl to do as much growing as she possibly can before menarche, and then make sure that she continues to stay, in my view, a few pounds above typical, because you never know if you're going to have a lung episode and lose 5 pounds. And now turn this into healthy and fit. I predict in the future, we in CF Care are going to do more work on body composition, which we've done in research, but I think we're getting closer to taking it into the clinic. And we need to embrace that fat stores are essential, because again, we have a culture that says, oh, the least body fat is the better. That is certainly not true for CF. It's not true for anybody with a serious disease. Having no fat messes up your immune system. I mean, you don't want to be malnourished. So I'm looking forward to that and some other kind of functional measurements, so that we won't just be checking weight and we can give you good positive feedback on some of these other things.
I know we're reaching the end of our time with you. Good. I think the final question that people are going to want to know is, if they're interested in this product for themselves or for their children, is this something they would go to their CF team to ask for? That's one question. And then have you heard, is this something that insurance is covering for people?
Okay. So very good questions. Because I am part of CF teams and love them, I would encourage you to go mention it to the dietitians. If they haven't heard about it directly, they can get information easily. It is, if you go to that website, it's there, you can order it, because not all patients have wonderful dietitians like we have in CF. And it's a medical food, so it's not like you have to have a prescription. Now, all that being said, goes back to what we all know well is one of the important things is working through the reimbursement process. So particularly if they go to their CF dietitian and get the order started there, the company has people who help them with the insurance. I can say I know, because it's only been out a handful of months, that, you know, as individual requests come in, there's success after success with going to their insurance company. WIC programs, women, infant, children programs for lower income people has been very successful. That sort of once a year it can be added to formulary. And I know, for ex-military families, I know TRICARE, which is the big military insurance program, has been supporting it. That doesn't always mean it's easy. You have to write the letters and all of that, but there's a whole team to help with that. And certainly as it becomes more popular, then, company by company by company and state by state by state, they'll do everything to get it reimbursed. Good. Well, thank you so much for the invitation, and best wishes to everybody on the, watching in, and be in touch.
Thank you, Dr. Stallings, for that incredibly informative presentation. And again, thank you also for your continued research and striving to find new solutions for our CF community to improve health and quality of life. Thank you so much. And to everybody who's watching, thank you for joining us. If you have more questions, you can contact us at CFRI. And we again thank our sponsors, Vertex Pharmaceuticals, Genentech, Chiesi USA, and Viatris. And we look forward to our next episode of our CF Community Voices podcast series. Thank you again, Dr. Stallings.
My pleasure. Bye-bye, everybody.
Goodbye.